Hello, I would like to welcome you to Savings Tools and Techniques, which is a recording of a webinar that was presented originally on November the 13th, 2009. But since I forgot to record it, that means I get to do another one. And actually, I recorded it again and the voice didn't show. So here we go. My name is Marcia Getting, and I'm a family economics specialist with Montana State University Extension. And this webinar schedule was originally designed for our county extension agents, and this is a list of some of the other topics that we're going to be presenting. But we found that several of the topics the general public is interested in, and of course, savings is one of those. As we look at different kinds of saving definitions, one I found that said, well, saving is conservation of money. Another definition that I saw was that savings includes reducing expenditures, so we can think of that as a possibility. And then a third definition was looking at saving as income that is not consumed by immediately buying goods and services. So that means that's the part we save. So as we look at saving, what year do you think had the highest rate of saving? Was it 1975, 1983, 1991, or the year 2000? Well, if we go back in time, I thought this was a very interesting chart that shows the savings rate, how it has had its ups and down periods since 1959. And if we take a look up there, we can see that, trial my error here, and see that in 1975, of May was the highest year or the highest rate that we had, and that was 14.6%. It was close in 1982 with a rate of 9%. Of course, we see the reason that the savings was going down is because the increase in household debt, and certainly we've seen that over the past few years. But in the year 2009, we had a substantial change and savings went up again. Why do people save? Well, for many folks, they were taught by their parents. Those that are married may have a spousal influence that says, we've got to save. And then some people have explained that, well, I'm really afraid of what happens if I don't save. So, in some ways, they're kind of fearful. And maybe this depends on if we're an optimist or a pessimist. And certainly we know that savings does have benefits. It relieves our personal stress. We see a lot of families with marital relationships that are in stress because people haven't saved, and then you have unexpected medical bills and family emergencies. And some people say saving simply just brings them peace of mind. As you look at this point in your life, what would you say is your primary motivation for saving? Is it fear? Is it the desire to minimize financial stress? Is it to give you peace of mind? Or, in the original series, we asked people to share ideas in the chat room. So as we look at these webinar main topics, what I thought I would do is give a brief review of informational resources that we have available on saving, and then provide some successful saving techniques that people have shared worked for them. So let's first of all take a look at some of these organizational and government sources. Now, these PowerPoints are on the web. So in other words, that would enable you, once you find these, to go to this particular website and look under savings, and you click on those. Once you click on those, then we have hyperlinks that will take you directly to those websites. Or you can copy a website into your browser. One of the good sites that will help you identify how much you need to save to fund your retirement is called the Ballpark Estimate. This is at a choosetosave.org website, and not only do they have the Ballpark Estimate, but they have what I call a gazillion of other financial calculators. It's almost like anything you want to calculate, there's a calculator there to enable you to do that. As we look at retirement planning, If you were asked a question in January of 2009 about your confidence level that you'll have enough for retirement, what percent of workers do you think they said are very confident that they'll have enough? Well, only 13% indicated that they feel very confident. And unfortunately, this is the lowest level since the survey started in 1993. Another source of information is from the American Savings Educational Council that also has financial calculators on budgeting, retirement, insurance, savings, and much, much more. So take a look at this particular website. The Department of Labor also has an excellent publication that's called Saving Fitness. It's a guide to your money and your financial future. It is available at this DOL.gov website, and you can either download that or order it from the Department of Labor. This U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission also has several very good resources. One is called Get the Facts, the SEC's Roadmap to Saving and Investment, and that is one that is available online at SEC.gov. The Federal Information Center has a brochure that is called 66 Ways to Save Money. This is available from their center in Pueblo. And if you go there, there's a lot of publications, so use the search function and search on 66 Ways to Save Money, and you will find that particular publication. Extension also has a resource. It's called Investing for Your Future. This is available. It is a 10 or now 11 lesson web study course, and it is available from Rutgers University. And it's available at www.extension.org. And if you want to, you can just do a search on that title and you would be able to get that publication as well, or sign up for the course. The National Endowment for Financial Education also provides a Wealth Care Kit. It is a guide for financial wellness, and it is available at smartaboutmoney.org. The National Endowment for Financial Education is an excellent resource on a variety of other publications as well, and at that website you would be able to click on those. MSU Extension has a Financial Security in Later Life website, and in that we also take you to a federal site that has a wealth of resources on saving. One clever approach to saving, if you're wanting to work with children, is the Money Mammals. And this is available at themoneymammals.com, and it has some puppet kinds of educational tools. We also see that there has been an effort by several organizations to have social marketing campaigns. In some ways, these are like the good old fasten your seatbelt campaigns. It started out where very few people were wearing their seatbelts, and now through time, I would say the majority of us do wear seatbelts. But America Saves Organization is a program. It's out there. They have a special week, and they have newsletters. They have a wealth of things. AFCPE is another organization, and the CPAs also have saving information. Now, America Saves designated week in this 2010 year is February the 21st through the 28th. So if you go to this website, you can sign up for a newsletter. You can indicate that, yes, you are going to be saving on a monthly or weekly basis, and they will send you reminders about that. There's also some really clever savings messages, and you can view these and listen to those through some mini YouTube examples, and there's some very clever examples there. Some of the titles of the videos include The Credit Card Guy, The Mini Adventures of Savings Man, and Savings Man Rap. So if you go to the American Saves website, like I said, you can sign up to receive monthly savings messages, which sometimes we need that reminder. They also have available some saver stories. And I like these because you look at those and say, these are ordinary people just like me, and if they can save, well, I should be able to save. So they've got an example of someone in Washington, D.C. saver that was inspired by an aunt to save. They have an example from Florida of a woman who has built her first emergency fund and is very excited about that. And then they have the story of a Philadelphia woman who has learned to save automatically, so it's not something she has to think about and do all the time. For those of you that like to take tests, America Saves has an opportunity for you to test your savings knowledge. There is an opportunity also to assess your savings projects or progress, and then they give you some ideas on how you can save more effectively. Now, how about the Association for Financial Counseling and Planning Education? This is a group that I belong to, and it's made up of educators across the United States that have a sincere interest in financial counseling and planning. And what they're offering is the 10% solution. So their idea is if you take your gross pay each pay period and drop the last digit, that would tell you how much to save monthly. So, if you get paid $2,000, then you drop the digit, and that means you would save $200. Same way with $3,000 and $4,000. Drop the digit, and that gives you an amount to save each month. The American Institute of Public Accountants has offered information to help you make sound decisions, and a component of that is savings. And it's called 360 degrees of financial literacy. It's your money or your life. Or I should say, your money, your life. They have been very clever at looking at the different needs that people have during their life stages of childhood, college, career. They have a special section for military and reserves, and then also for couples and marriage. They focus also on parenthood, home ownership, entrepreneurs. Perhaps you're in a life crisis. They're looking at the sandwich generation and retirement. So this is an excellent resource for looking at savings. So I'll jump back here and say, this 360 degrees of financial literacy, do a search in your web browser and that particular program will come right up. Another interesting program is called Feed the Pig. And you go to this website called feedthepig.org. You'll get savings tips by email or phone. You can join a discussion, and then they have a quiz type of thing called Beat Your Brain. They also have feedthepig.org for tweens. So they've got 4th, 5th, and 6th grader opportunities. They have the Great Piglet Challenge, and then they have an interactive adventure in saving and spending. So while in my day we wouldn't even thought of learning this kind of information on the web, kids today at this age know the web, they know how to get there, and this is a site that's been designed for them. So my conclusion is that there is almost an overwhelming amount of savings information today. I remember the days, which may be showing my age here, but it was really difficult to find resources. And then you would have to write off for those and wait weeks to receive information. So I would encourage you that once you start looking, even Googling on saving yourself, you'll have millions of choices. And the idea is, how do you find the informational source that will work for you? And some of that just takes time to go through and look at those resources. I think we also need to understand ourselves as a saver and look at what motivates us to save. And if you will admit to being a non-saver, what would it take? What would motivate you to save? So as I looked at that, I thought as a topic, it might be helpful to look at techniques that are successful for other families. And what might be successful for you may depend on your willingness to incorporate some of these techniques into your lifestyle. Because as we all know, there are some things that take a lot more effort than others. So we need to examine the alternatives and see what would work for us. Bottom line, though, is are we willing to delay gratification so that we will have money to spend? There's no doubt every one of us could spend every dime that we make because there's always wants out there of things that we would like to have. So we're really asking, are you willing to make a change in your behavior to make saving a priority in your life? There's a gentleman that's come up with a theory, and he's calling it changing for good. And he says these stages exist. Pre-contemplation, you're thinking about it. Contemplation, you're going one step further. The third category is preparation, because you're really starting to get yourself organized to do some saving. Action is when you start that saving. And then maintenance is when you save steadily every month or every week. And recycling means sometimes we have to go back and start over because we may have dropped our saving for a period of time. So I decided I would look at some of these saving techniques based on behavior change levels. So I don't know whether you would call this very scientific, but I'm looking at some of those challenges that could be, oh, this is no sweat, no problem, I can do this real easy. Some of the others, well, they're somewhat easy, but they take a little bit more work. Some may be challenging, but they're very doable. And then I'll have some of those I'll call, well, Marsh, get real. You don't really expect us to do this, do you? So let's look at some of those saving techniques that are at the no sweat, no problem. Okay? They're easy, or at least in my mind, easy to do. And one of those easy to do's is I call making your savings automatic. In other words, how can we make sure that this occurs without having to think about it? So for some people, that's arranging for monthly automatic deposits from your paychecks or your checking to your savings accounts. So you're making it automatic. You make that first trip to your bank or credit union, set it up, and then it's taken off the top every month, and you know it happens automatically. And of course, the benefit is that you have this set aside, and you can use it for emergencies, and you can borrow if you really, really need the amount. Another benefit is you don't have to think about it every payday. You can simply adjust and change as needed. You can also arrange for contributions to your tax-deferred and tax-free retirement plans. The benefit that you might look at and say, well, I don't consider this a benefit, but it is, because if there is a penalty on withdrawing before age 50 and a half, you are less likely to make that withdrawal. In other words, you will make other adjustments to make sure you don't have to take that 10%, which it is on individual retirement accounts. Some of the plans offer you the opportunity. There was $16,500 in 2009, and there is the catch-up for $5,500. These are the same amounts in the year 2010. If you boost your savings by 1% more, this particular chart shows the example of somebody that's at a $25,000 level. And at age 25, let's say they started increasing by 1%. This is how much they would have in their account, and this is how much if you wait, though, until age 35. So we know we're always better off starting earlier rather than later, but it's sometimes hard to find that incentive. And then here, I'm just looking at boosting your savings by 1% more, but I'm comparing age 40 with age 50. So if we wait to age 40, we'll have $25,000, but age 50, we would only have $8,000. So certainly, again, we're better off starting early. Another technique for having savings is, for example, a friend just shared that she had paid off her loan on her car. And I said, well, this is a great opportunity for you to place that former payment in savings. You're used to living without it anyway because you've been making those payments, so why not put that in your retirement fund? The benefit, of course, is that you've already altered your lifestyle for your loan payment, so that payment to savings can be made without sacrifice. You could also put your state and federal tax return into savings if you're one of those that does receive a refund. Benefit, it's already, again, money that you've learned to do without, and this could be the start of your savings fund. Another opportunity is to open a Montana savings account. It's a medical care savings account, and you save income in taxes. So, for example, if you have income above $15,400, you have savings of about $207, and that's money that could be put in your regular savings. The benefit of a Montana Medical Care Savings Account is that you're saving money on medical expenses that you would have paid anyway. When I ask at my public meetings, how many of you had medical expenses last year that weren't covered by your insurance policy? About 99% of the hands go up. But when I ask how many of you have a Montana Medical Care Savings Account, maybe one or two hands. And what we find from the Department of Revenue in Montana is only 1.5% of Montanans have opened an MSA. And I think that's really sad, because when I find 99% of the people have medical expenses that weren't paid or weren't covered, this is where an MSA can come to your rescue. And you don't even need to put in the full amount of $3,000. You can track your expenses through the year. And if you discover by the end of December you only have $2,000, well then, take that $2,000 from your savings, put it in your Montana Medical Care Savings Account, and then withdraw it, because you have proof that you have those kind of expenses. I should have asked this question earlier, I guess. What percent of Montanans do you think have MSAs? And in 2008, it was 1.4, but they just reported to me that in 2009, it's now 1.5. Now let's look at some techniques that I would call adopt creative ways to save. Some people hoard their coins. And the U.S. Treasury is saying Americans hoard about $15 billion in loose change. And I know at home I've got this great big jar that I've been putting coins in, and then I started putting my quarters in cups, and it does add up, and every little bit counts. I have a colleague that writes checks for $1 or $5 up in her checking account register. And at the end of the month, she takes a look at that and looks at how many checks she wrote. She multiplies that times 5, and that's the amount that she deposits in savings. Now, for some people, this would be a hassle, but you know, it's something that works for her, and I think it's not a right or a wrong. It's what works, and go with what works. I know of one family who put the money that they didn't use for eating out in a recipe box. And they would go through this weekly to show, this is what we save by not eating out. And then they would put that amount in saving. I know of one mom who had a sugar bowl at the top of the kitchen cabinet. And that was her way of just squirreling away some money that she could use for emergencies. I also know of one dad who hid money in an envelope under his mattress. And of course, your professional would say, oh, no, no, we don't need to store this money at home. And I would agree normally. But again, if it works for this individual, then go with success. I know of parents who have packed lunches and totaled their savings. And that way they go, yep, maybe it's not the greatest, but it is cheaper. I know of another family who have what they call Nothing Week. Every month they have Nothing Week. And what they do is they save money that would have been spent on activities that cost money. So that's their way of saving. It's Nothing Week. The whole family has agreed to it. Of course, there are people out there that save money on coupons. And what they do is they add those up. Sometimes I think, well, what a hassle. But again, it works for them. Go with what works in your situation. So we had folks share in the chat room when we did the webinar of creative techniques that were working for them now and growing up. And what we discovered is there's a variety of ways out there that work for individuals. And some of these you don't even see reported in a book. So think about what would work for you. Now let's look at what I would call somewhat easy techniques for saving. Are there any habits that you have that cost money that you could say, I'm not going to do this anymore? You know, I have some colleagues that take advantage of one of those lattes every day. That's $3. $3 times 5 is $15 a week. You look at that 4 weeks a month, that's $60. Now, granted, you may feel you deserve that every day. But I had another colleague that say, I started adding that up, realized how much it was, and decided to say, okay, I'm going to let myself have a latte once a week. And if you look at the money that you save on items, it really can add up over a period of time. And it just depends, of course, on how much that you snack, so to speak. And if we look at another program that Extension has called Small Steps to Health and Wealth, there are correlations between health activities and wealth activities. And no doubt, if you're cutting back on snacks, you're also cutting back on some of those calories. Another technique is to accelerate your debt repayment. In other words, add $10 to your payment on a loan. Add 20, add 30. Because once you get that loan paid off, then you've got that money to be saving. Now, which ones should you put that money towards? And if we're looking at an economic response, the priority should be given to the highest interest rate debt. So in other words, if you've got one out there that's 18% and you've got another debt that's 8%, let's take that extra money and put it towards the 18% because that's how you're going to save the most money. And a great resource for helping you see the benefit of doing this is called PowerPay. This is a program that is available at Utah State University. You can see the website there, https://powerpay.org. And you can go there, list all your debt payments, and it will show you the difference in how much you can save. And we looked at an example debt here of paying at 10%, a $330 payment, but we increase it. And we can see there that with the $330 payment, it's going to take us 10 years. And the interest that we'll pay is over $14,000. If we increase the payment to $500 and some, then we pay that sucker off in 5 years. And we will save $6,000 in interest. So as we look at all these interest amounts that we're saving, we could look at that as money that's in our pocket for saving. Now let's look at level 3, which are some challenging techniques for making behavior change. One of those might be making the minimum payments on your credit cards. In other words, some of us get into a lifestyle that when the bill comes, we look at that and say, oh, thank goodness, I only have to pay $10 or $15. And if we get suckered into that, we find we're constantly paying the minimum. And when we pay the minimum, we end up paying a lot more, of course. So if we can kick that habit, we'd have money for savings. And of course, the benefit is that once we pay off the money not paid in interest, it's available to us to save. And we can take an example of Matt and Julie, who have credit card debt of $10,000. What do you think is the average annual credit card interest rate? Well, Julie didn't think it was as high as it is, but it's actually 18.9%. So we did an example of looking at them increasing the payment amount from $400 in their case to $600. And you can see here it will take 13 years to pay off that $10,000 loan if we're making $400 payments. If we increase that payment by $200, in other words, we'll make $600 payments, then we've only got 8 years to pay that off. So look at the interest savings, $5,000 plus or $3,000 plus. So we save a lot more. We double our savings if we make that $600 payment. Another strategy is to really, as a family or as an individual or as couples, establish savings goals. Because what we have found is families that establish those goals are more likely to follow through. And they're more likely to follow through if they put it in writing. So as your goals, you can look at, do you want things? Are you saving for things? Are you saving for experiences? And again, it's not either as right or wrong, but it's what is it that you as a couple would agree to, and what would it be agreed upon by the family members? And of course, as an individual, you're the one in charge, and you can set your goal, and you don't have to consult with anybody else. But couples and families do. So once you have those agreed upon goals, you are more likely to save. And one of the resources that we have available from MSU is called Tracking Your Savings Goals. This is a register that was funded by the Montana Credit Unions for Community Development and the First Interstate Bank System. Here's an example of the front cover of that, and here's the back. So it gives you the opportunity to indicate the dates that this particular register is for. And what you do is you list your saving goals and then indicate what kinds of things go under that. Then there is a figure to allow you to look at the date that you need those, and then a blank one for you to fill out yourself. So let's look at the way the register works. This particular family has determined that they need a total of $4,000 for the goals that they established. They want to have $1,000 in the fix-it category. They want to have $1,000 in their vacation category. And they're wanting to set aside $2,000 to use as a down payment on a car. And they do have goals of college and retirement, but at this point they just weren't willing to deal with those. So, look at all these different arrows, and let me tell you what they mean. The red arrows indicate that this is a, well, they're not arrows, let's call them a lightning bolt. Those indicate that a deposit has been made. And if you notice, that deposit under the fix-it category means this family made a decision at the time that that $50 is going for the fix-it. The $50 is also recorded on the right-hand side under the savings balance because that's how much is in there. So the light blue line shows with the blue arrows that there is $50,000 balance in the fix-it fund, and we now have $50 in the balance fund. Now, when we look at the green lightning bolt, we see that there was $75 taken out of the fix-it, out of the paycheck, and again was deposited in the fix-it fund, and we recorded again in the savings balance. So we see the total balance is equal in both. So this is one method of looking at tracking your savings. True, you can do the same thing on the computer, and for some families, that's the most effective way. Other families aren't there yet. They still like to do things with paper and pencil. Now let's look at some of those get real techniques, or in other words, Marsh, you've got to be kidding when you recommend these. But I present them as an alternative, because I know that certainly we have campus folks in Bozeman that are what I call moonlighting, because I see them working at Walmart and other stores. They're moonlighting for additional income so that they're meeting their needs and trying to develop some savings. I thought this was kind of a cute cartoon. It said, until Ron got me this job, I didn't realize I was an important factor in his savings plan. You can look at the moonlight savings benefit that if you do that, depending on yearly amounts and different ages and when you started. So for example, even $1,000 a year, and if you do that ages 25 to 65, you're going to have $159,000 plus. But if you wait until age 45 for that 20-year span, you would only have $33,000. And if you were able to supplement your income by $4,000 a month, wouldn't that be nice, yearly, then what happens here is we've got $638,000 plus and $132,000. So for some families in some communities, that can be an option. And I often think of my dad because he did this a lot. If he wasn't working for the gas company, he was out doing measurement of land for what we called ASCS at the time, and then he got into trimming trees. So certainly that was a work ethic that was demonstrated to us kids growing up. Another technique is to trade down to a smaller home. Now, for some families, this is a realistic alternative. I have others that say, absolutely, no way. I finally have a home that's big enough, and when my kids and grandchildren come to visit, I want to have enough space. I have other people that have laughed and said, you know, if I have a smaller home, nobody's going to stay there. They can stay in a motel room. They can afford it because here I am retired, and they're making a whale of a lot more money than I did. And an added aspect of that, maybe it gives those families some sort of quiet time away from the noise factor. I saw this cartoon. I thought it was cute. It said, retire. Sure, Cheryl, you can retire if we live in a tent. And, of course, she's going, ha, ha, ha. The savings that can benefit from a smaller home is that there's no mortgage payment or perhaps a lower one. There should be reduced maintenance costs. Of course, lower utility bills. You don't have as much to heat or air condition if you live in certain parts of the state. Ideally, the property taxes will be lower and your insurance premiums will be lower. So there are some families that are ready to make that move. They're saying, I had the big house, been there, done that, and now I want a smaller place, so I've got more money for savings. We could also look at a different technique of saying, we're just going to move to a less expensive location. And if you read AARP magazine, each year they rate different cities to live in, and the cost of living is there. And maybe in Montana, some people would consider moving from Bozeman, who has the highest pricing in housing, to some place like Weibo or in eastern Montana where the pricing isn't so high. But of course, you need to look at those differences between a Bozeman and a Weibo. And Weibo folks are going to say, we're the best place to live. And Bozemanites are going to say, well, we're the best place to live. But you decide. I looked at the average home price, and of course, this is something that's going to vary from time to time. But as I mentioned, Bozeman does have the highest rate as far as price on houses. And I looked at Ekalaka, and they have one of the lower rates. So that gives us some ideas of choices, right? Some people are looking at another state as a possibility. Okay, so let's say we're going to move from Wyoming or Bozeman or someplace else to another state. Now, which state do you think is the most affordable to live in? Okay, Oklahoma, Texas, Tennessee, Arkansas? Think about that for a bit. Well, I don't have the answer here, but actually, number one is Oklahoma. Another technique is to make a commitment to save by learning about saving techniques and then take action to do that. So that's partially what this webinar has been about, of looking at those, learning those saving techniques that have presented, and then take action on those. As we look at the webinar schedule for the rest of the winter and spring, we're going to have a grab-and-go on January the 20th. February the 18th is going to be retirement planning. March the 16th, we're going to be looking at evaluation tools. And April the 20th is Money Talk, a financial guide for women. So I wish you the best as you decide on which saving techniques and tools that you will adopt. And I look forward to your attendance in some of our other webinars. Best wishes.